Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time to get sexy. So watch Secular Sexuality live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.
Hello and welcome to Talk Heathen. Today is Sunday, October 23rd, and I am your host, Johnny P. Angel. And joining me today is one of my favorite fellow hosts, Katie Montgomery. Katie, how are you doing?
Hello, everyone. I'm doing good, thanks. I'm hyped. All is well here on Hate Mountain.
Hate Mountain. Careful when you climb Hate Mountain. It's a rough trip down. Talk Heathen is a live call-in show. We have open lines. So get your calls in at 512-991-9242, or you can connect via your computer at tiny.cc/callth. You know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's incumbent upon me to say it, in fact, that Talk Heathen is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 organization dedicated to the promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of religion and government. Yes, that's right. It's true. All those things are true. Ways that you can support Talk Heathen and the ACA is to go to Patreon at tiny.cc/PatreonTH and make a donation there if you like. And if you can, of course, you can also like the video and subscribe to the channel, enable notifications, comment on your favorite caller or your least favorite caller, but
or host,
be kind. You can become a channel member. Click the join button below the video. You'll get custom chat emotes and you will help promote the mission of Talk Heathen and the Atheist Community of Austin. And of course, below the live
to destroy the sun.
Earth's yellow sun is our greatest foe. It is only by all of us joining together that we can smite this menace and live in peace and quiet in the cold, dark reaches of space. And maybe
it's probably like the original god. So it's like the main enemy of atheists.
Yes, right. We are against all gods. We secretly believe that they all exist. And our goal, if we haven't stated it before, is to destroy them because deep in our hearts, we know that they are judging us and we just want to sin. But besides that, we have a live chat as a fundraiser and 100% of the proceeds go directly to the ACA. YouTube doesn't charge any fees, even though they may be trying to stop us from destroying Earth's yellow sun. Katie, it's been a while since we've had a really, really dynamite caller, you and I. And I'm wondering if, and tell me if your thought is the same, if maybe we've just scared them off. I mean, we have had good callers. I'm not saying that, but those are...
I have a feeling that, you know, just as we believe in all gods, I think all religious people just know they have no evidence.
Yeah.
You know, if they had evidence, they could call in and just give it, and then we'd be humiliated live on air, and that'd be hilarious. And seeing as that hasn't happened, perhaps there just aren't any with any evidence.
Yeah, and I just want to make it clear to the audience that neither of us, as far as I know, have a humiliation fetish in any way. So it would be a bad thing for you to call in and humiliate us with your best evidence for God or ghosts or ghoulies or goblins or any other G-lettered beginning word that is supernatural in nature.
Grapes.
So,
super grape. Ghostly grapes.
Ghostly grapes. Specters. All right, let's get on the line here with Stephen, and maybe Stephen will spark some confidence in the theistic callers that we really want to call in and just own us like a 1993 Chevy Tahoe. Stephen, you're on Talk Heathen with Katie Montgomery and myself, and the question that I have here is, how do I help my family to see that the things they're concerned about, LGBTQ people, for example, aren't a threat, and the real threat are things like fascism? That's a real threat. How you doing there? You're on the air with us. What are they saying?
I'm doing all right. The big thing is that most of my family is very heavily leaning conservative, even alt-right in some cases. And a lot of the media that they consume, Alex Jones, Tucker Carlson, libs of TikTok, blah, 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 have made a lot of them fixated on this idea that the borders are wide open and we're being overrun and trans people are trying to groom your kids. Like, none of that's happening. Relax. And the things that are actually happening is all of the businesses that provide essential services to us, have no interest in any of our well-being, our healthcare industry, the places that we get our food, all of these things, huge threats, big deal, very important. Should very much be concerned about how to prevent those things from getting worse than they currently are. And not so much on the scary trans people thing.
So I did a lot of research for doing a talk on how to combat hate recently, and I was going to give it at university, and then my talk got shut down because they got a load of threats and they needed more security. So that was a bit ironic. But one of the things that I found out,
a talk about hate got shut down
from me. Yeah, it was it's something to put in the talk when it actually happens. But one of the things I found, which was mentioned in studies on how to combat hate and stuff, was about exposing people to groups that they hate and fear. And I think, in lots of these studies, they found out that if you just create arbitrary groupings of people and tell them about each other and perhaps have competitions or perhaps just have them compete for resources or something, they often did this with teenage boys and scouts and things, then they would start coming up with ways to describe the other group which were negative, and they would, it would escalate and they would end up vandalizing each other's stuff and saying they hated each other. And if you then cause them to come together for whatever reason, for a group activity where they had to work together towards the same goal, or even just spend time around each other, then that hatred diffused. And I think that we see that a lot in civil rights movements. And I think a good example is during the gay panic and the fight for gay rights. When you don't know a gay person and you have no exposure to gay people, and you've been brought up just thinking they're a bit weird and different, if the news tells you or that they're out to get your children, or they're doing all these horrible sex things or whatever, then maybe you'll just believe it. But then the problem is you can be told that 100 times over, and you could have that indoctrinated into your mind for years and years and years. And then when you actually meet a gay person, especially if you've got reason to trust them straight away, like they're a family member or a colleague or a friend's friend or something, you'd be like, hang on a minute, this is just nonsense. Like the years of propaganda can just be undone. So in terms of combating hate on a bigger scale, and especially with trans people and immigrants are, two of the main focuses of the reactionaries at the moment, is to a bigger strategy would be to try and expose people to these people and their ways of life, to just show that they're just the same as everyone else. And that's why things like representation in media can make a big difference. And it's why they fight so hard against representation attention in media because they know that it does make a difference. But on a personal level, I mean, if you the issue is often when you do get in a situation when it's a room full of people who have been fed a load of, like, you know, transphobic propaganda, and then they do encounter a trans person, they've got this wall up in front of them already. You know, the two groups aren't, they're already going to be hostile to each other, and it's hard to, like, kind of diffuse that to get them to the situation where they can be exposed to each other. But if you can get a situation like that, then that can make a big difference. I mean, that's kind of why I do these call-in shows, this one and others, is just to show people that trans people are normal. And so, you know, if you can get any of your family to call in to this show, then they're, you know, I'll talk to them. But in terms of, like, dealing with family members and arguments, you can sometimes, you know, bring a load of facts and you can say, oh, well, this is nonsense. You know, there's no evidence for any of these claims. And, you know, these people are stigmatized and we know what happens when fascism gets in power, etc. But their position isn't rational. They're not driven by facts. They're driven by emotions and fear. And so really, you've got to combat the emotions by exposing them to stuff. And maybe you can show them media, or, you know, find a comedian who they like and then be like, oh, did you know they're a trans person? You didn't know that. Oh, well, they're just normal. Okay. So that kind of stuff can make a difference. Yeah. But I don't know, Johnny, do you have any thoughts on this?
Isn't it strange how we have this multimedia universe we live in now? You can communicate very easily with people across the globe and even people in space when they're up there. And you can, hello, there's one now, a person across the globe and all of you people out there in YouTube land. But and yet what on one level, oh, it's gonna make us all come together and we're gonna be able to, I can talk to a classroom of students in Afghanistan and I can talk with them about what it's like to be, you know, whoever the heck I am. But truth is, dickhead on the internet occasionally. But the truth is, it does that, but just as much, it does exactly the opposite, and it causes people to hunker down and they find other people who think or claim to think exactly like they do, and it boils down people's extreme positions. And so exposing oneself to other people, not like that, but exposing yourself to the ideas of other people, I think is the trick, isn't it? Because it's hard to look somebody in their actual face and tell them that they're not good or bad because of a particular quality that they have. Actions is one thing, you know, it's easy to throw a tomato at a bad politician, but it's not that you should do that, but it's hard to tell a regular citizen that, you know, oh, I don't like you because you're Filipino, or you Protestants are garbage people, or you atheists are scumbags. I mean, I know that people have family members and friends who will say things like that, coworkers. We've had callers about that. I know. But I think on the whole, it's harder to do that in person than it is to do it online. And so if there's a way to drag your family members to have a friend, or like Katie suggested, some media personality to trap them into enjoying what's inside their head, the good ideas they have, and like, oh, wait, and they're also LGBTQ. Well, but they're funny. And then maybe over the course of time, I like their jokes. Maybe, but it's about getting them out of that boiled down state, I think.
I think on that, another key part that I found was about deplatforming, and that can be a controversial topic. But there's you can look at this from another perspective. In order to believe all of this horrible stuff about various minorities, they need this constant input. They need, you know, the things you listed, and some of these sites and organizations and people exist just to constantly, like, every single hour of the day, promote something to cause rage in people. I mean, that's kind of the point of tabloid newspapers in general, but it's even worse now we have the internet. And sometimes breaking people out of that cycle of constantly reinforcing it, it's like with a cult. Like, often you'll hear from people who used to be in cults, they'll say that for some reason, you know, they went on a missionary thing and then they weren't connected to the central office anymore, or that they, you know, had a family member die or something, and they were out of the cycle for a few weeks. And just being out for a few weeks stops you from having this constant reinforcement. And maybe if they all, I don't know if I can call out the same groups you did, but for example, if they would just stop following and watching those garbage accounts for a couple of weeks, they would stop caring about it. Because, like, in your day-to-day life, you might encounter a trans person, but generally you don't. There are so few of us that you don't really encounter us. And so it's just not an issue. Like, if you just lived your life, no one would give a shit about trans people. The only reason they do is because there are millions of trans people worldwide, and they can just, you know, the reactionaries can pick a different one every day and try and ruin their life, and then it gets you in a rage. And so deplatforming doesn't necessarily mean, you know, taking away these people's voice, though maybe you would advocate for that or not. That's a different discussion. But certainly getting people who are the consumers of that out of that cycle of doing so. And I think that's similar to any sort of religious extremism too.
Yeah. I want to hear what you've tried, Stephen, but I do want to say this. I get ads on YouTube and different social media places, not ads, but videos telling me five techniques on how to escape if I'm handcuffed by a bandit, or if my car goes into a river, and how I can get out of my car, or how I can survive a shark attack. I really do. I get this. I don't know what the hell I'm searching for that I get this, but I do. And it's not realistic. What I need to focus my life on is healthy diet, exercise, good financial decisions, you know, other things like that. And so your family members are being inundated with fake concerns, or concerns that are blown out of magnitude because it doesn't fit in with whoever's producing that media's agenda to either sell advertising revenue or political agenda to reform society. But Stephen, what have you tried? Like, what are some of the tactics that you've tried with your family? Because we've been talking. What about you?
So the trouble is that, and I might sound horrible for saying this, but I've given up on trying to convince them that, you know, trans people are groomers. They are so lost in that anytime I try to explain to them the humanity of someone that's just trying to exist, it all, you know, slides off of them like water off a duck's back. And immediately I'm brought back with, oh, well, you referred to them as she, and that's not correct. And then, bam, misgender. It's like, okay, so we're just not having the same conversation. My tactic at the moment is trying to, instead of getting them to go down that track with me, it's more just don't put so much of your energy and your time into hating people you don't know, and maybe doing something about the problems that you do know. Like, I don't think anybody can disagree at this point that, well, obviously there are people that do, but the most
I don't even know what you're going to say, but yeah, there's people that disagree. You go ahead.
But most of us recognize that monopoly is bad, right? Most of us recognize that police
the
brutality
worst game.
Is
the
bad.
Settlers of Catan is far better, but you're talking about monopolies or the game. What are you talking about?
Yes.
They're both bad.
Like, most of us recognize those are bad things, and they agree with me on that. It's just I am struggling to find a way to move that energy, move that passion into a productive path, and not so much on the all trans people are pedophiles and immigrants are bad.
Like, sure.
There's so much energy there that can be used for something productive if I can just get them to shift a little bit.
Yeah. There it is. So what if you get them to, instead of taking a direct, didn't we just like crash a little probe into an asteroid recently? I think we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the DART program.
And I bet you what they did, they didn't just come straight at it. They probably did a little side action. They probably, you know, banged it a little bit to the left or the right or up or down. If that even means anything in space, it probably doesn't. So what if instead of going straight at their stupid position, oh no, I said it, you direct their attention to something neutral at first. Direct them to be productive members of society, contributing members to a charitable cause, cleaning up a highway or something like that, something not particularly controversial. And maybe you can develop a culture of cooperation and community-mindedness amongst your family members. Chances are they're too busy sitting there watching Fox News or OANN or some garbage for the brain like that. But maybe they're not. Maybe they'll be motivated. And maybe starting there and then slowly working your way towards something where there may be, gasp, some trans or gay or some folks like that volunteering as well. And then heaven forbid that one of the people there should be totally cool. And then maybe they'll have that moment where they're like, oh no, Carl is a trans man, but Carl's cool. Yeah, Carl's cool, fucker. What are you going to do about that now? So anyway, I don't know. That's a thought, but you can always just walk away. I know that we are told that blood is thicker than water. I think that's true. But there's a whole part of my family I don't talk to because they are not interesting, because I don't like their attitudes on certain subjects. And rather than fight all the time, I just walked away. So that's an option. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is that you can use a lot of your energy up on trying to de-radicalize people. But sometimes it is just futile. You can try your best. And I think it's always good to, with your family, put in some effort. But mm-hmm. when it gets to a certain point, you can acknowledge that your effort is better spent on something else. And if you want to make the world better for immigrants and trans people and other minority groups being hated by this reactionary garbage,
yeah.
then you can use your effort to do that. You can help their communities and help fund them and volunteer for services and teach. Most people are neutral on these issues. Most people don't have an opinion on trans people because they don't know anything. And they're much easier to win over than some diehard, you know, viewers of idiot TV shows. So
yeah. Yeah. They help you, Stephen?
I might just have to detach a little bit more. The problem is that we're pretty reliant on, them for childcare and a couple other things. Because, you know, if I was to put my kid in any kind of daycare, it's basically the same amount as my rent these days. It's all part of the process. And I think maybe just trying to find some trans friends of mine that are willing to go to bat, you, Katie, or like Arden. I have a couple of them that might be willing to do that. But at the same time, I don't want to put it on them to be like, hey, you need to defend your humanity for me, because I don't know how the fuck to do that.
You don't want to do that with a random. You don't want to like be like, hey, you know, Dave from work, you're trans.
Yeah.
But if with you know, people who are putting ourselves out there, that's kind of what we're trying to do. So
yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah, I think a collateral attack where you are trying to steer, educate, find common ground. I don't know. But always with the option to walk away. It's a tricky one, but your energy might be better spent on people who are like, I don't understand why this is a problem. I'm seeing in the comments, I don't even care about LGBTQ issues. They don't affect me. I don't care. And I'm like, well, you better care, because those are human beings. And if you call yourself a humanist, then you better care about that. And if you don't, well, then I'm not interested in you either. I don't care about you. All right. Well, thanks a lot there.
Also,
go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Close up.
Yeah. Close up. What? Go ahead.
Oh, no. Sorry. I was just going to say, you were talking about people in the chat saying they shouldn't care. But like, I thought the whole point in, you know, of being a skeptic, like, why are you watching this show if you don't consider yourself a skeptic? Even if you're a theist who considers yourself a skeptic, like, isn't the whole point here critical thinking?
Yeah.
And if you've got these people who are saying these things that are factually false, yeah. which are part of their whole ideology, you know, no one just randomly hates trans people. It's always baked into, you know, theocratic fascism or something like that. That's part of their worldview. Why aren't we being skeptical about that too? Surely, I mean, that's the whole point, right? Like, religion isn't the only thing that's factually false that people believe in.
It is the whole point. And don't call me Shirley. All right. Well, you know what? If you shop on Amazon, you can support the ACA at no additional cost to you. Simply visit tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA and designate the Atheist Community O Austin as your selected charity. And Amazon will donate a portion of their profit directly to the ACA. It won't affect your price at all. The Talk Heathen merchandise store is back. Visit tiny.cc/merchaca to get your favorite items like t-shirts, hoodies, and coffee mugs. Check out brand new items like beanies, cell phone cases, and tote bags. They're not brand new. They've been around for a couple months now. So what's your excuse? And there is a special limited edition item each month. Be sure to check out our store and all the other stores of all the other shows. And of course, we have a channel that houses all of the shows of the AC in audio podcast form. You can access that by visiting tiny.cc/AENpodcasts, and you can become a part of the Talk Heathen community in our fan-run Facebook page located at tiny.cc/FBTHG.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We are now taking a call from Rick, him from Canada. Rick didn't do this. Our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ predicted the coronavirus in our era. Rick, you're on the line with Katie Montgomery and Johnny P. This is good.
Hey guys,
I want to hear about this. Rick, where did old Jesus predict the coronavirus?
Yeah,
good. I'll get into that. I just really wanted to touch on this just with the last caller. I know it's a little off topic, but I just wanted to point out that, I mean, you guys have a show where you try to mock in an attempt to abolish my identity.
All right, I'm going to tell you something. Right now, Rick, I have gone ahead and muted you. I didn't want a prologue. I didn't want a preamble. I didn't want to provide you with a soapbox to complain about what you may or may have not seen on Talk Heathen in a previous call. I clicked on your call, Rick, so that you could tell us where precisely Jesus predicted the coronavirus. And the first thing out of your mouth was the sufferings of the damned. So go ahead, Rick, start over again and tell me where in the Holy Bible Jesus predicted the coronavirus.
Or other places.
Maybe it was in the Book of Mormon. I don't know. Go ahead. What do you got?
As a King James. Do you have Google in front of you? Can you pull up?
I certainly do.
Always. What do you got?
Okay. So it's Matthew. You got King James version, please. It's Matthew 24:15.
24:15.
So while you're pulling that up, I talked with you before, Johnny, and we talked a bit about prophecy. And I pointed out that Christians are the most persecuted group. You laughed, but I hoped you Googled to find out it's the truth.
I did laugh.
You know it's true.
I did laugh. I still laugh
you
about
did
it.
Laugh. I hope you Googled still, it, right? Because you guys are scientific, right?
Not in America, though.
Yeah. I'm a lawyer, allegedly, not much of a scientist, but yeah. when a particular religious sect controls all three branches of government in one form or another and has what is called hegemony over society, I can't really think that it's oppressed, but at least in this country. All right, so now we're at King James Version, Matthew 24:15 through 21. Was that where you wanted to direct us? Is that
Matthew 4:15? That's fine. So before that, he says, when he's describing the end, he says, "This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness unto all nations. Then the end shall come." We talked about that. Then right next, he says, "So you guys were Christians."
Should we back up? Should we back up to the previous section, Rick?
Yeah, I haven't seen the bit before.
Well, yeah,
that we talked about that before, Johnny. But
we're not.
I wasn't
Rick,
here then,
Rick, no? Katie mean? Wasn't here. The audience might not have been here. So go ahead, direct
should
us
I do
to 14 that first
to 15.
Yeah, should we do 14 to 15? Let's go ahead and do 14
to
15.
I've got 14 to 15 up. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to do that too.
Do you want to read it or shall I read it?
You read it. You read it, Katie.
Do you want me to read it,
Katie, before you read it. Before you read it, Katie. Johnny, so you know, according to the Bible, what the holy place is, according to Jesus?
Rick, we're talking about Jesus predicting the coronavirus. Okay, so we're going to deal with that. And once you've convinced me that Jesus predicted the coronavirus, we can talk about anything. Okay, so
well,
this is me being very, very snarky.
Just to say, I've read a little bit ahead, and in Rick's defense, Jesus does mention the holy place. And I don't know where the holy place is. So maybe it's heaven, or maybe it's Walmart.
What does it have to do with the cross?
So, what might be good though, Rick, is maybe if we could like read it out and then you could, rather than kind of like building up, could you read it out and then point out the bits? Because then I can say, I don't know where the holy place is.
Yeah.
Because otherwise Johnny might jump in and assume they're leading us.
I do that kind of thing. Yeah. Go ahead, Rick. Where's the holy place part? Read that holy place part. Go ahead.
Well, just read 14 and 15.
Jesus says, destroy this temple and in 3 days I'll raise it up. And the disciple said he was talking about his body. He then tells the woman at the well, there will come a day when people won't worship in the temple nor on the mountain, but worship in their hearts and worship in spirit and truth. So the holy place is one's body, right? Every Christian knows that. So the next part is when he says, once this gospel will be preached all across the world, the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination that causes desolation enter the holy place, right? So when something's entering the body, right? But the next line that he says, right? So this, the King James Version was written in 1611, right? The next part, it says, whoso readeth, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, if I accept your thing about the holy place being the body, and it does say, see the abomination of desolation, maybe you say that's going into the body, whatever. I guess my first thing to say here would be, like, coronavirus isn't the first pandemic, and it's not going to be the last one. Like, I mean, there was the Spanish flu in 1918, or whenever it was. So how is this a prediction specifically for coronavirus and not, say, for Spanish flu or another pandemic that's happened since either 1600 or since Jesus was, you know, around saying this stuff? How do we know it's coronavirus and not something else?
Good one. Yeah, good point.
Well, because it's the first worldwide plague, right? And he's telling us when the end's coming, so it's going to be the last as well.
Wait. Wasn't the Spanish flu?
I don't know if it's the first worldwide plague.
It was pretty worldwide. It affected a lot of people. Also, why are you picking the King James version of the Bible as your starting point? I think you're doing that because you're trying to avoid the Black Death. The Bible wasn't written per se in the 1600s. It was pieced together from a bunch of source material back in the first couple centuries of the Common Era. And so you're doing that so you can avoid the Black Death, I think. I mean, I don't want to ascribe to you disingenuous motivations, Rick. But it seems that if you included the earliest copies, or at least the earliest complete copies of what we now recognize as the Holy Bible, you would have to account for other plague, bubonic plague, Black Death.
I think King James, Johnny.
I think Spanish flu was the first.
First of all, because can you hear me? So I'm using the King James because English is now the most dominant language in the world. And secondly, the King James is the most bought and read Bible in the world. But most importantly, the next thing that it says there, it says, whoso readeth. So it's talking to the reader of this book. Whoso readeth, let him understand. Look at that punctuation mark at the end of that sentence, Johnny. What is that?
It's a colon and a smiley face. Oh, my one.
It's a universal smiley face. Isn't that ironic?
Rick, your audio quality suddenly dropped. Did you change your audio setup?
My headphones fell out. I'm trying to get my headphones. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I kind of missed. I was just researching just to be sure. According to this paper in front of me right here, of course, there will be lots of different papers and different opinions. They reckon that COVID-19 is the fifth global pandemic since the 1918 flu pandemic. I mean, the 1918 one killed a greater percentage of the world's population and was more brutal. I just feel like even if the Bible just said straight up, there is going to be a global pandemic, I'd be like, well, that's why would that be coronavirus and not Spanish flu? Do you see the argument I'm making? I don't know what differentiates this to you, why it stands out. Because what it seems like to me is it's just the pandemic that's happened in your lifetime rather than the first one since Jesus.
Well, it's because of what Jesus says prior to that. He says, once this gospel of the kingdom has been preached all across the world as a witness to all nations, then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, there you go, right?
That had happened. That had happened in 1918, right? Like in 1918, Christianity had spread across the whole globe. You know, and that's when colonialism was much stronger than it is now.
Sure.
And we just had a huge world war where a horrific, you know, desolation is happening, that one of the grimmest things that humans have ever done to each other. And then straight after that, there was a pandemic. There must have been people at the time looking at these verses, like you are, Rick, and being like, this is it. This is what Jesus predicted. And maybe I could just agree with you and agree with them and say, okay, Jesus did predict that. And then you call in like nearly 100 years later and you're like, oh, Jesus actually predicted this one. I'd be like, oh, I thought he predicted the last one. I mean, that was worse. There was worse wars going on. You know, more people died. The virus actually targeted younger people as well. Like, it was a real grim time to be around. Mm-hmm. I just feel like that's worse and more and more fitting.
Yeah. Is there something in here in the Bible about the structure of the virus, about where it would have originated, who was affected, treatment plans,
what year it would be,
maybe.
I just, and also, another thing, if we just accept that, there was a worse virus before, I mean, how do we know there's not going to be another pandemic in 5 years time that's 10 times worse? I mean, we could have one that really starts wiping humans out. And if that happens, then surely that would be the one that Jesus predicted. I mean, this is, I guess the point that I'm trying to get at is when you make a prediction, if you're just like, it's going to rain, when it then rains, that doesn't mean you've made a prediction that it's going to rain. You just said something that would happen. And, you know, maybe you could say it was incredible knowledge that Jesus knew about pandemics back in the year zero or whenever he wrote this, year 30 or something. But, I'm not convinced that that's what this is about. But even if we did, even if he just said there will be a pandemic, well, okay. But without saying there will be a pandemic in the year 2022 or 2020, it's just not very impressive to me as a prediction because it could be anything. It could be another one. It could be what we've got already.
So 100 years ago, when they were reading that Bible, it says, "Whoso readeth, let him understand." They're like, oh, I better pay attention to this. And they're looking at that punctuation going, why would they put that there? That makes no sense. That shouldn't be there.
But yet, oh, you're making an emoji argument.
Yes, argument from God based on the emoji. The emoji argument for God. So let me get this straight, Rick. You're suggesting that the emoji that's contained in this version of this line is the hand of the Lord reaching through space time through who wrote the King James version? It wasn't King James. It was his scribes, and he put a colon and a parenthesis, closed parenthesis down there, and that was so that we the people of the emoji age could see that they were speaking directly to us. That the word of God is not limited in time and place. Rather, the word of God is universal, including us heathens who live in a post-emoji world. Is that your argument?
The most universal symbol on earth is right there in the book, and it's telling you to pay attention. Pay attention to this, people. That's what it's saying to you. So, I mean, you can argue that it has nothing to do with anything, but why is it there? Why is it in the most read copy of the Bible on the earth, in the most spoken language on earth, in an era where Jesus says, my gospel will be preached, a virus, something desolate will enter the body. Now pay attention to this, and then puts the emoji. You don't find that significant at all?
No, I don't find that significant at all.
To be honest,
I'm unmoved.
I don't. I mean, maybe if it had a minus symbol in between the colon and the closed bracket, but like it's just some punctuation. My main thing is if I was the son of God and I was going to make a prediction, I just think that I'd write there's going to be a pandemic in 2020, or even if I wanted to code it a bit and wanted to make people work for it, maybe I'd be like the fifth great plague of humankind or something. Or something like that, you know, or like disease will become you once you have sent a billionaire to space or something like that, you know, that really narrows it down. But I think if it was going to do this punctuation mark, which has been around since the 80s,
punctuation mark, to be fair, has been around since the 1600s, but the emoji has been around
as an emoticon. Yeah.
Right. Rick, is your God so flimsy that he can only properly communicate this particular sentiment in his holy text via emoji? Emoticon?
Something else. So I just, sorry to cut you off, Johnny, but just using this argument, the first emoticon used like this, according to Google, is 1982. And that seems reasonable because that's when the internet was coming around, when smartphones, mobile phones were coming around, this kind of stuff, texting and things. Mm-hmm. And there was a global pandemic in the early 80s that actually killed more people than the coronavirus has, according to Wikipedia, which is, you know, not necessarily the best thing, but around the same time. So this is 1981, 1982 times, and that was AIDS. And that was a global pandemic. So sure, like if we like this, and this is the same year they started using this punctuation mark. So surely that's what they're talking about and not coronavirus.
Yeah.
Like that's a more, it fits your prediction a little bit better.
I think that's it. Katie, based upon the standards of evidence that Rick employs, I'm not saying this is Rick's position. I'm saying this is mine. I'm completely convinced. I think that God was reaching through the hand of King James's scribe to communicate the dangers of, actually, I don't even see the communication of it. I think you have to really do gymnastics to see that he's talking about a global pandemic. Okay. We're laughing and having a good time. Rick included, I think, about this colon and closed parentheses, but where's the prediction? Can you go ahead and read off the words that actually are the predictive words? Cause I'm looking, and maybe I'm not too smart. A lot of people would say that's absolutely true. So go ahead and read it out for me, please.
Yeah. So perhaps he's it's not so much a virus as it is something that's going to be forced on the world, and people are going to start dropping dead like flies because of it. Right. We haven't seen that before.
But you're giving me a prologue, but I've asked for the meat. I want the meat. Don't give me the salad. Nope. Give me the meat. Come on.
Okay.
What do you got? Where's the line? Where's the line?
Memorized.
Yeah. No. Open up. You've got Google in front of you, don't you, Rick? Go ahead and open up Google.
I don't need Google. It's in my brain. It's in my brain. Unlike you guys, I know the Bible, right? So it says this gospel of the kingdom will be preached all across the world as a witness unto all nations.
What's the line? Go ahead. Give me the line. Give me the line. I'm going to read it along with you. What's the line?
He's doing Matthew 14. He's doing 24:14 again.
24:14. Okay.
Matthew 24:14.
Great.
If you do 14-15, that's the two sentences we're having.
Yeah. All right. Let me get there. Hold on. You know, Rick, unlike you, I'm not in a hurry. So let's go ahead and get there.
I'm having fun.
All right. Yeah. All right.
I'm having 24. Fun.
24:14. It's good to have fun. I like fun. All right. 24:14. Is that right?
And hold this on. Gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for witness unto all the nations, and then shall the end come. But I just
therefore,
feel like, you know,
when you see the abomination
first...
that causes desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoso readeth.
Spoken of by Daniel the prophet. Where does that come in? Where does Daniel the prophet? Did Daniel the prophet make that?
The abomination. Daniel the prophet. Let's go there. Let's
spoke
go
Daniel.
To Daniel the Daniel.
What did Daniel say?
The prophet.
Daniel talks about the sanctuary of strength being desolated, right? Jesus is quoting Daniel because it's kind of vague what he's saying, but Jesus knew what he was saying, and now we know what he was saying too. So all works out in the end, right?
I feel like we need to, if we're dealing with this prediction, we definitely need to know what Daniel said. Do you know where in the Bible? Because it's all in your brain. Do you know where this line from Daniel is?
I think it's Daniel 9. I don't remember the Daniel part. No.
Daniel the prophet abomination. Is that maybe the search term we're looking for? Folks at home,
if you
want to help, go ahead and put it in chat. I'd love to. What is the abomination of desolation? I'm going to Life, Hope, and Truth.
Mark
which
mentions
is
it.
Which is going to ruin my Google ad revenue.
Oh, hang on. This is interesting because I just searched in the King James, and if you look to Mark 13:14, we get the same line pretty much. But when ye shall see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought to not, and then in brackets, let him readeth understand, comma, close bracket, then let them be in Judea flee to the mountains. So in this one, it has the exact same quote from Jesus, but has different punctuation.
Is it a winking emoji or is it a comma?
it's like a someone with one eye winking.
Punctuation there, right? That's a great point. Why would they use two different punctuations for the same piece?
Rather than writing up to scribal error or punctuation conventions for the sake of clarity, I think it's very clear why they used a different punctuation there. And I think it's because God could tell that there was going to be a conversation about this on October 23rd, 2022.
Amen.
And amen. I hear you, brother. And no, Rick, come on. Really? So.
What do you mean, really? It's brilliant. Can you explain that punctuation? I read that years ago, and I saw that, and I was like, what is that? Long before the coronavirus ever came, right? That has been...
But after HIV, though.
You can understand in our era.
Rick, you read that after the HIV pandemic.
After HIV.
You read that after the HIV pandemic started, right? After 1981, you read
Well, not
that.
Before something was forced upon the people of the world. No, I didn't read it then. I didn't even know that was...
AIDS was a global pandemic forced upon the people of the world. And you know, people resisted fighting that even more, that the evil people of the Earth who were taking away resources because of the people it was targeting, good innocent people.
Yeah, at least the free peoples of the Earth gathered together to try to solve the coronavirus pandemic with science and different measures, albeit stumbling steps and in a rush. And although it did, I would argue, harm a lot of people and killed many, many people, it's not a desolation. We're back in the world. We're living, we're working together. We've seen that this may have been a trial run for a far more dangerous pandemic. And so I'm not moved, Rick. If this is the power of your God, the power of emojis, I get you have the enthusiasm of the Holy Spirit coursing through your veins, Rick. Or at least that's might be what you think it is. But I think this is piss poor.
Rick, I must say my favorite moment was finding the exact same sentence with different punctuation elsewhere in the Bible. That was
it's brilliant.
Highlight of talking to me, I think.
Rick, you take it easy, Rick. I think we're gonna move on from this. Please call back. Folks, please spend some time on this one. I think that Rick may have discovered proof for the existence of God in the form of the argument from emoji. But you know what? Let me take a moment here to just collect my thoughts. All right, collected. Hey, the ACA hosts several videos, video programs other than Talk Heathen. You may have heard of the nonprofits, the flagship show of the ACA. You've heard of Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, and the Atheist Experience. If you didn't catch all the shows last week, here's a taste of the things that you probably want to go back and watch.
Certainly there are divided families, you know. Yeah. Christ said that he was going to do that. Hey. So, you know.
Is that a fulfilled prophecy?
I suppose so, right? Just look to the trees, Aaron.
I want to believe in the ice wall, baby. I want to go see the ice wall. Book me a first class trip to the ice wall. I'll pay whatever I got. Where the f*** did we get our penguins? And
bring me the ice.
The Lord turned me from my wretched ways and I'm forgiven. And it's like, wow, that's so nice. So you can still do whatever you want, which it's funny that they claim that atheists are only atheists because we just want to sin and we want to do whatever we want when they do the same shit.
I hear you talk about it. It's like it's an embarrassment to us Christians that we've had slavery in the Bible.
Well, it should be. I think the ownership of other people should be an embarrassing thing. Yeah.
God is not anti-slavery. He's a proponent of slavery.
Why aren't you embarrassed by that?
Well, the difference between you and me is I am a researcher. You are not.
You're the researcher? Ben, look, Shannon, Ben Dan's a researcher. We're just a couple of who don't know anything. So that's why I'm asking you, Ben Dan.
I'm looking at my degree. Like, what a waste of money.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let me tell you something. If you can arrange to be...
Tell me, Johnny.
I'm still reeling. The argument from emojis.
I'm still having a good time about that.
Yeah, I'm having a good time. Let me shake it. Look.
All right, chill out. Come on, no more laughing. It's cool. Fun's over.
Let me take another hit. Let me take another hit of the old energy just here. All right, here we go. Okay, listen. If you can arrange to be in the Austin area between October 27th and October 30th, you know, the end of the month, consider joining us in the studio audience at the ACA Freethought Library for live broadcasts of Secular Sexuality, the Truth Wanted Halloween special, Talk Heathen, and AXP. Doors open at 6 p.m. on Thursday and Friday and noon on Sunday. Parking is where you can find a legal spot. Just park around the corner. There's going to be tons of spots in the neighborhood. Take it from me. Pro tip. If you can't make it here this month, don't sweat it. We're going to continue to broadcast from the library on the last week of each month. Remember, the end of November will be when we're meeting up that time. So keep watching the show and our website, www.atheist-community.org, for news and information as we expand our in-studio offerings in the near future. Speaking of that truth-wanted Halloween special, here's a hint of what we have in store.
Last year, Truth Wanted took you where few people are brave enough to go. The most haunted room of the most haunted hotel in Texas, the Driscoll Hotel. This year, we're bringing things back in-house at the Freethought Library for the first in-studio episode of Truth Wanted in 2 years. On October 28th at 7 p.m. Central, join me, Objectively Dan, along with ex-Christian Aaron and MD Aware for a night of spooky stories and good fun. And, if we can find any, maybe even some ghostly interactions. If you also happen to find yourself in the Austin area on October 28th, please join me at the Freethought Library for some free Halloween fun. So remember, always keep wanting the truth, even if it can be a bit scary sometimes.
That's right. It may be scary. But you know what's not scary?
The truth's often scary, I think.
It can be. I think, especially
if you're involved in an ideology of some kind and then you discover something and it's not right.
Yeah.
I think that's why people are scared of being an atheist.
Yeah, right. Because you've hung your hat on a rusty hook or an imaginary hook. And then your hat falls onto the ground and it's covered in the dust of reality. That's a really good analogy. We have a top five patrons. And Katie, I would be, and the audience would be honored if you would please read off the top five patrons this week.
I would love to read off the top five patrons this week. So at number one, we have Eric Tweet. At number two, we have, this is why Johnny wants me to read out the top patrons this week, Dinglebree Jackson. Number three, we have Balaam's Donkey. Number four, we have the Bearded Skeptic of TikTok. There is only one. No one else on TikTok has a beard. Mm-mm. And number five, AME. And number six, we have honorable mention for Richard Gilliver. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Yay. Mm-hmm. Yay, Richard.
That's exactly right. And that's all of them. I'll tell you something. We had one hell of a show on the nonprofits, and I would be remiss if I didn't tell you what it's going to be this week. We've got Jason Sherwood, Helen Green, Richard Firth, I've never said that out loud. Richard, not Richard Gilliver, another Richard who's awesome, and August. And he's going to forgive me or hold a grudge. And these folks are talking about the $1 billion judgment against Alex Jones, a Wyoming ranch for troubled teens that closed following abuse allegations, it's outstanding how these things happen to religious groups and they managed to survive. A looking back at the Salem witch trials and Vatican II and the rise of atheism. So if you're interested in those topics, we've got a great panel. It was a lot of fun and they are there. But you know, before that, we've got some additional calls. So let's go ahead and take, oh no, is it who I think it is? Let's find out. I want to take a call from Kevin, him from New York. Is this Kevin from New York? Kevin from New York? Or a different Kevin who's from New York?
Hi, Kevin. There's only one Kevin from New York.
Yeah, there can be only. I'm not hearing anything.
No, we got him.
How are you today?
It's you. It's
good
you.
Kevin, how are you?
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't the call screener tell you not to ask that, Kevin? We're starting off. Go ahead.
Tell me
about this. You want to talk about the existence of Jesus? I do too. So what do you got? Let's talk about it. In what sense do you want to talk about?
Is it better than emojis?
Yeah. Are you persuaded by the argument for emojis?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Rick, you didn't make it past the Kevin filter. All right. Let's talk a little bit more. What about the existence of Jesus? What do you got? Maybe you got something good this week. Come on.
Well, obviously, I'm sure it'd be safe to assume that I do, in fact, believe that Jesus did exist.
Jury's out on that one.
Tell us that. Jury's
out. Yeah, jury's out. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Whether you take the atheist position or you take the theist position, I wanted to throw out some things which I think is a food for thought. For example, I have a beef with both positions because, well, for one thing, the Bible itself isn't the only source to really go to for knowing about Jesus. Well, in fact, I mean, if we even use the Bible, even the author of, say, the New Testament, John 21:25, even says that, what does it say? John 21:25 says that, and Jesus also did many other things, the which if every one of them should be written, I suppose the whole world could not contain the books that should be written. And so that's basically me understanding that as an endorsement for other sayings, other books. And so whether you're a theist or an atheist, other sayings or writings shouldn't be useful suspects on the topic of Jesus' existence.
So what's another source? What do you mean? Give me an example.
Well,
sacred-text. Should we go to sacred-text.com?
Well, no. Okay. I've gone down this route before. But some of it does is contained in what's known as the Apocrypha. But with that said, there's details about Jesus's childhood even, and that as he grew up, he was bestowed with a type of wisdom in such a way to where as parents would send their kids to school to learn, that was not necessary for Jesus, even as a child.
Is this the one where he murdered the teacher because he didn't like him? I'm sure that's
that was
story.
Only a small part of the story.
Kind of a key part.
It's a key, Kevin.
But still, yeah. I'm not quite sure what this is. This is like, so we've got this other thing. I'm aware of this being some source that some people claim could have been part of the Bible, which talks about Jesus's childhood and says that he murdered a teacher he didn't like. Like, okay. But so what are you saying? We're saying we should, like, clearly the Christians don't like this book or it'd be in the Bible. So we've got like the Bible, which says a load of things. And then I agree that obviously not everything Jesus ever did is in the Bible because, you know, if he's real, which I'm not convinced, because he obviously like ate lunch sometimes and they didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
And then we've got like some other book. Like, how do we know, like, which one of these are true? Like, what are we doing? Are we just reading every single book that mentions Jesus and just assuming it's all true or what?
Yeah, Kevin, that was my question. So a book says a thing. Why do question. We? Yeah, is that your question? Was that it, Katie? Book says a thing.
Sorry. It's okay.
I'm with you. We're on the same page. We have sync. We're in sync.
Well, no, not at all. To address what Katie said to begin with, I don't know if it's really an issue that a lot of Christians don't like these type of books, but rather, in my experience, is that they're completely ignorant to the fact that these books even exist in the first place.
I'll agree with you. I'll agree with, I will agree with Kevin from New York that a lot of Christians don't know that these books exist. Because most Christians, most religious people, I would argue, probably don't read their own holy books. They just listen to their leaders and they follow in the community and they listen to the preachings. Would you agree with that, Kevin, as well?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Cool.
But, you know, there's a lot of parallels. There's a lot of things that I think point to an extremely clever design, which is extremely meaningful. Things that point to the Trinity, actually.
Okay, Kevin. A book says that something happened. Okay. How do we know that what the book says happened actually happened? Because in the Silmarillion, it says that Annatar, Lord of Gifts, taught Celebrimbor how to make rings of power. Annatar, Lord of Gifts, you know, I'm not going to spoil it. Get out there. Maybe look into it yourself. I don't think that actually happened. I don't have evidence, sufficient evidence. I don't recognize that Annatar, Lord of Gifts ever existed, that Celebrimbor existed, that there were rings of power. And yet there's a book that says it. So how do we cross that line between a book says it, and that's cool, nice story, versus a book says it, and what it says actually happened in the really real world and not just Middle Earth or Beleriand or the Undying Lands. I think it was Arian, actually. But go on. What? Why should we believe that the Apocrypha, anything in the Apocrypha, actually happened, Kevin?
Well, because during the time period that it was written, let's take the Roman Empire into consideration. Now, these were the people who were who believed in paganistic or so-called paganistic gods, and were vastly against Christianity and its teaching, to the point of sentencing people to death. But my point in going to this is that a lot of these records came from the Praetorian Guard of the Roman Empire. For example, one apocryphal text that is kind of incorrectly titled, that goes by the name of Gospel of Nicodemus, was actually the correct title of it is the...
Kevin, I don't mean to cut you off, but I don't quite see where this is going. Like, Johnny's question is... Johnny's question is, there are some books that have stories in which we know are made up. Yeah. And there are some books which have stories in which we know are true because they're history books. And then there are some books you might pick up and be like, is this a story book or is this a history book? How do I find out? How do we know? Like, you sort of gone on this rant about the Romans not really liking Christianity or whatever. Okay, but like the Romans probably didn't like lots of things. And some of the things written in books are true and some are not, regardless of who likes them. You know, people were writing that the earth was going around the sun in a book long before people liked it. How do we know which class of book?
I'm sorry?
No, I was just going to say, how do we know which class of book this is? How do we know if it's made up, totally factual, somewhere in between? How is this closer to a history book than... How is the Bible or the Apocrypha closer to a history book than it is close to the Silmarillion? How would you go about determining that?
It's because not only... It's push it to the side, but not only do I believe that the people from the Bible existed, but the people who were against the Bible during that period did in fact exist. For example, Pontius Pilate in his courtroom proceedings, his writings on what he's gone through his life is actually could actually replace the Gospel of Nicodemus as the apocryphal text itself.
Kevin, the Orient Express existed in real life. People took the Orient Express, I believe it was to cross the Transvaal Mountains. I think that's right. Does that mean that there was actually a murder on the Orient Express and that the characters from the book Murder on the Orient Express were real people and that that was like a historical retelling, like a kind of like a documentary in book form, a nonfiction book? Yes or no?
Well no, but...
No, okay. No. So why then? Okay, you're going to give me a good reason. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The reason why I think this is so important and the parallels that were told along with the story of Pontius Pilate account is because if you take everything into account about what had happened during the story, Pontius Pilate was made out to be he was made out to be someone who was possibly going to go against Caesar's wishes if he didn't put Jesus to death.
Kevin,
so that's not an answer to Johnny's question.
Yeah, Kevin, so we've got I'm going to go back to Spider-Man. We love that Spider-Man example. Spider-Man slinging webs, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is out there fighting low-tier bad guys, stopping bank robberies in New York City. In the comic books, you will see Grand Central Station. You will see the mayor of New York City makes an appearance. You will see, there's even comic books where like presidents show up and talk to Spidey around like 9/11 and stuff like that, where like, thanks for helping out, Spider-Man. The Empire State Building, Central Park is definitely the East River plays a part. Politics are depicted in some form in Spider-Man comics, whether it's The Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, this, that, Spectacular, does that mean that it's a accurate retelling of what actually happened in New York during the time period depicted? Or is it a story? So Pontius Pilate, you know, doing his thing, and it's in history. There may be other sources of Pontius Pilate doing things. And in the Bible, there's Pontius Pilate doing things, okay? But the difference is, in the Bible, there's supernatural stuff happening. There's magic, there's resurrections, there's all kinds of stuff happening, much like Spider-Man and Rhino and other members of the Sinister Six, Electro, perhaps the Vulture. They don't exist, but we know that the Empire State Building exists. So by the same token, we should say that all the fictional characters in Spider-Man comics exist because we know the Empire State Buildings exist. Is that where you're going, Kevin?
No, that's not where I'm going at all.
Where are you going?
In fact, can I ask you a question?
I'm afraid.
Can I ask you a question? Yes. Have you ever considered for a moment, because
I'll do it now.
From what you've known, from what I've said already and from the past, that I do believe in the so-called miracle accounts. But have you ever stopped to consider that from a God's perspective, if you grant me for a moment that God may exist, have you ever thought for a moment that from God's perspective that the things that we call miracles, that nothing at all is actually considered a miracle?
Nothing's amazing for God. Sorry, Katie, take it.
Like, if God is a natural part of the universe, or God is the only natural thing, or whatever you want to argue it, then either everything's a miracle or nothing's a miracle. The only reason miracles are impressive is because they break the laws of the universe that we understand. But God created the laws of the universe, and he's the one that makes it impossible, and he can break them at free will. I'm not really convinced why an all-powerful God would even do miracles. Wouldn't you just make the laws different?
Kevin, I can imagine.
I agree with you, Kevin.
Have you ever considered, Kevin, that all these stories that are written in the Apocrypha and in the Bible and in the writings of the Praetorian Guard are just stories written by somebody? Have you ever considered that? If you haven't, can you consider that right now for a few seconds? And then tell us what your thoughts are after.
Well, yeah, I have considered it, but
How'd you rule that out? Tell us how you ruled it out that they weren't just stories.
Well, because not only, I know that you guys already heard for an argument that the people who wrote the Bible had the fear of death being brought upon them. But so did the opposition. The opposition being Pontius Pilate himself, the Praetorian Guard, who were some of them being witnesses to these so-called miracles. And so if they had brought up the account of what they witnessed to their peers, they also would have been brought upon the sentence of death because of what they reported.
Kevin, how do you know that any of the already things you just... Kevin, how do you know that any of the things that you're saying that the writers of the Gospels, the Praetorian Guard, any of the church fathers, how do you know that any of them existed and weren't themselves a product of a writer writing a story? How do you know?
Well, the impact of it. It goes much more deeper than that, but
all right, Kevin, I think I know where you're going.
Yes.
Would you say that the words of Muhammad, whether he wrote them himself or it was a helper, would you say that has an incredible impact on the world and upon world history? Billion people live by billions of people face toward Mecca multiple times a day. They don't eat certain kinds of food. They wear certain kinds of clothes. They have certain roles in society. Would you say that's an impact? That's an impact, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it has a big impact, so therefore it's what he wrote is true?
There would be some things that are true and some things that are not true.
Ah, so...
It's the same in the Bible, though, isn't it?
Yeah. So a thing can have a great impact and not actually be true. You're admitting right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not a good argument for why the Bible's true.
Do you know how many videos I've watched about Lord of the Rings in the last year? That book has had an incredible impact upon the references I make on this show and other places. A personal impact in the t-shirts that I shop for. Trying to find an Iluvatar t-shirt is really hard. There aren't any good ones, okay? It had a big impact upon how I choose to display myself to the world. But none of the stuff in the Lord of the Rings and all of those books is true. So throw out the impact argument, Kevin. How do you know that the things that are contained in the Apocrypha and the various holy books that you examine actually happen besides the impact? Throw the impact out. What do you got? What's your number two reason?
Well, you said throw the impact out. I don't know how I could do that exactly, because it's extremely meaningful. And again, I stress people to look at these things themselves, because it has such a great impact for
Kevin. Them. I think what Johnny means is,
if you
believed in something that was true, you might have good and bad reasons for it, like for believing at the same time. And if you find a bad reason and throw it out, that doesn't mean you then stop believing in it. It just means, oh, we no longer have our reason. So that means I'm no longer going to make this argument out loud because I know it's a bad reason. That doesn't mean you have to stop believing in it. So maybe, like, you could say, I know Jesus was definitely real because my favorite breakfast cereal is like wheat biscuits or whatever. And we could say, that doesn't make any sense. That's so not rubbish. A logical conclusion. It doesn't make any sense. That is a bad reason. Well, I didn't even say the brand name, so I think I can get away with that. But, you know, that is a nonsensical justification. So we'll throw that out. But that doesn't necessarily mean that was your only reason to believe in Jesus, because you also like met him once at the shop. You know, so when Johnny says throw this reason out, he's not saying this isn't meaningful to you.
Yes.
And he's not necessarily saying you're wrong to believe in Jesus. What he is saying is the argument that Jesus must be real, the Bible must be true, etc., because it's meaningful, isn't a good reason, because other books are meaningful to other people, and some of those other books are contradictory with the Bible. So meaningfulness on its own cannot be a good argument. So all you've got to do from your worldview, you've got this, you know, you've got your big worldview, and some of it's right and some of it's wrong, same as every other person. All you've got to do is take this must be true because it's meaningful argument, and remove it because you know it isn't a good argument. And that means you can fall back to a different argument. Yeah. You know.
So what's your fallback argument? Fallback argument, Kevin. How do you know?
All right. This is my fallback argument. Okay.
All right.
It's
give us your number two.
Parallels between my fallback argument on even the existence of God, okay? It's drawing the parallels between reality and concepts, okay? I don't want to make it sound like I'm trying to switch up the argument or anything, but this really is my fallback argument. Parallels between reality and concepts such as mathematics, for example. And it brings up a question, even. For example, questions like, when did 1 + 1 = 2? When will 1 + 1 ever not equal 2? There's no beginning or end to it. It's a concept in itself, but I draw the parallel between the concept to reality, and that gets me to knowing the existence of God, because try to answer that question, when did 1 + 1 first equal 2? And when will it ever stop equaling 2?
Yeah, so I mean, we can have a discussion. We could, I think it's a good question. You know, I guess another way to say it is, did we as humans invent math, or did we discover it? And if we discovered it, I mean, how we describe it is built up with a load of definitions. And when we make certain definitions, we can then draw conclusions based on those basic set of definitions. So if we define a number line and come up with some shared understanding of that, then all of the arithmetic and stuff just falls out as a conclusion of that definition. But we could say, did that exist before human? And, you know, maybe that's an open argument that we can have. But either way, I feel if we did discover maths rather than invent it, who says that maths came about with the universe? Or who says that maths is required, you know, a God is required for maths to exist? I don't see why necessarily that's the case. I mean, it's quite possible that the universe only exists because of maths. Like, lots of the core fundamental parts of the universe, like quantum fields and etc., lots of that is the product of maths. You see all these symmetries in how various particles work, and it's often because they're just the simplest form of whatever mathematical thing they fall into. I just don't see why, when that's the case, there has to be a god to have created maths. And if God created maths, does that mean before God created maths that 1 + 1 didn't equal 2? What does that even mean to make that claim? And if, like, was God able to create the universe without the use of maths? Or was maths a tool that he had to create in order to make the universe? And if that's the case, was he not powerful enough to create a universe without maths? Or I feel like this, maybe this is what you said at the start, but this opens up a lot of questions here.
Right.
And the fundamental point for me is I don't see why we need a god for maths to exist. I don't see why that's a relation.
Is math merely a description of relationships in the universe? Or is it somehow dictate the nature of the universe? It seems like it's a tool that we have used to describe the nature of reality, much like language are like a series of a bunch of sounds and words and shapes to associate with things that we see in the world. It doesn't dictate what the world is like. The world, in a way, dictates what's contained within math. I've got a lot of math friends, and I'll tell you, whenever I've, like, math professors, when I've taken these kind of questions that we've heard on the show, I'd love to have one of my math professor friends on the show. They're like, what the hell is that supposed to do? Right? It might sound profound to you, Kevin, and this is an argument from the authority of Johnny's friends, but that, which is almost as good as the argument from God by emoji, but it's like, that's not a thing. That's not helpful. That's not a useful thing. That's a misunderstanding of what math is. And so
I see what you guys are saying. But what I have to say is that in my opinion, we've both invented and discovered mathematics simultaneously.
I think they're mutually exclusive.
While the numbers themselves don't actually have a physicality to them, I mean, it does have a good, impactful meaning to it, because if, for example, if 1 didn't equal 1, then what good is it? In fact, the very concept of 1 + 1 = 2, when did it begin to be like that way, and when will it end, gets us a little bit closer to the understanding of what eternity might be.
I'm gonna try to get one of my mathematician friends to write me a 2-page response of what you're talking about. Okay. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do that. All my math friends are at a party. Actually, I know where they are. I'm not there because of reasons. Okay.
But you weren't invited.
Yeah. I was invited, but I'm not going to get into it. Okay. I'm just not at the party. Sorry. They're having a good time, but I'm not on purpose. It's nothing personal. You, Kevin, were going to give me and Katie and I, homework. You were going to give us reading material. You were going to send us stuff to examine. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't forget. And Kevin, you never did. So Kevin, I'm going to give what happened? What's your excuse? What happened? It's been a year. In fact, well, no, I posted it on Facebook.
I did actually. I did, but it never got to you, it seems.
Resend the same document, and when you resend, it'll have the original date. And I'm gonna assume that there you might have misspelled something, or someone did a thing where we didn't get it. Go ahead and do it, and I at least will read it. Katie Montgomery is very busy, so Katie may get to it, might not. But I've been waiting a year for that homework. So
I'll read it if Johnny's reading it. We'll do a little tag team and read it together.
Yeah, call HR. We're gonna have a telephone call, and we will. we'll work through it together. So anyway.
Okay.
That was a threat, HR. I hope you're watching.
Well, before I go, could I just give you a title of the source? That all right? I mean,
that's all right. Title of a source.
An audio book. Okay. It's an audio book of a researcher who used to be atheist but reconverted to Christianity. And when I started researching this guy's material, it really hammered down my belief and reassured me on the things that
What's the title, Kevin?
The audio book is titled Guidebook for the Elect. If it doesn't interest you within the first 30 minutes, then I'm sorry I wasted your time. But I think it'll really...
All right, Kevin. Thank you.
You'll see.
Thank you, Kevin. Take care. And keep studying. All right. I'll tell you what, there is no such thing as a waste of my time. So I will look into that and we'll see what we can see. Let's take one last call. Okay. It's going to be a short one. Mm-hmm. This is Jamie, him from the Lone Star State of Texas. And the question here is, how do you respond to transgender people should have their own sports leagues? You're on the air with Katie Montgomery and Johnny P.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was in a conversation with some oppos, and I'm, of course, very much a trans rights ally. And someone said, well, I don't mind them playing sports, but they should have their own league. Why don't they? Why should they be trying to get into all the other leagues? Why can't they have their own league? And other than the spluttering disgust, I couldn't come up with a cogent counter argument in the moment.
It's fair.
Right. I think so when we're talking about like separate leagues for things, I think one of the things I always think of is how there's a women's chess league. And obviously women aren't any less or more smart than men. And it's not a physical game. So what's the point in having a women's chess league? You could say it's some relic of the past where, women were considered less intelligent or whatever, but that's just totally garbage. You know, obviously that's not the case. But it is still a useful league. And so we could, and the reason for that is because misogyny is a big factor in people's performance for various sports and games. And there's studies that show this and shows that women perform worse when they think they're playing against men than when they think they're playing against women. And you can do this quite easy with chess because you can score games very easily and you can anonymize the players. And there's a few really good YouTube videos about this, which is really interesting. But it's why they have in chess like an open league and then a women's league. So in that case, sometimes separate leagues are a good thing. But it would be bad if women were forced to only compete in the women's league, because then what would happen is what we see in things like football, where the women's sport is just as competitive, just as exciting, just as talented as the men's sport, but it gets massively underfunded and people don't pay attention to it. And women footballers are just considered worse because of, you know, misogyny. So we'd have that kind of difficulty. And in games where there aren't physical differences playing a role, then it's bad to segregate people, because segregation itself can cause an issue, like I was just explaining with football. So when we like look at trans people in sports, we could say, maybe trans people should have their own leagues. And like the first question is, are you saying trans people should have to like be mandated to do their own leagues, or are you saying optional? And if it's optional, then that could be good, because it could be a situation where trans people get to go and play sport with each other without having to face against transphobia. You know, go play football with your friends, and maybe you could have enough people to have two teams and play against each other, and it might be fun. And I know that in the UK there is a all trans football team and they all play together and stuff. So for combating like transphobia and stuff, that's good. But the issue then is, to have a game of football, you need I guess you can maybe do five a side, I think. I'm not really not knowledgeable about football, but to do like a big full game of football, you need 22 people. Are there 22 trans people who want to play football in the nearby area? Like in the UK, there are, but maybe if we pick another sport like rugby, you need more people. Are there how many, 30, or how many you need for a full rugby game? Or maybe like volleyball or ice hockey? Are there enough people in the UK or even worldwide to play a game of all trans ice hockey? And then if there are, is there just one trans league? Like, or is there, I mean, obviously some trans people are going to be like the top of their game and others are just going to be amateurs. So maybe we need to divide it up, and we end up in this situation like we saw recently. I think it was Utah. The governor actually vetoed their trans bill, which was to ban trans kids from playing sports. And the reason was, he was like, this only affects one child in the entire state. So if there's only one child in the entire state trying to play sports, and you're like, let's do our own league, who are they going to play against? Like, absolutely no one. There's no one who they can play against, and it's an effective ban of them. So we end up with a situation where if we have these mandatory forced leagues, then firstly, no one's going to watch it. No one's going to watch the trans sports league, because there won't be many people in it, and it'll be even more prejudiced against the women's sports leagues for lots of things. And then who are they going to play against? We're not even going to have enough teams, and then the difficulty is going to be spread. But then also, the whole point in this argument is people talking about sexual dimorphism and the difference in ability for certain sports, often strength-based sports. And like, even if you make the false claim that trans people are their birth sex and they fit in the averages there for sporting performance, which is just false. If that's the case, then what you're saying, you want just trans men and trans women, non-binary people all to play together? Or do you need two separate trans sports leagues or three separate trans sports leagues? Or if you then accept the reality that transition changes people's performance, and especially when we're talking about trans people who transition at different ages, so we're going to have trans men who transitioned before puberty, during puberty, after puberty, and in later life, and then trans women who did the same. And each of those are gonna, like, if you haven't gone through male puberty, then you cannot have a male puberty advantage. And so then we're gonna say there's this like percentage of a percentage of a percentage of trans women who now have to have their own sporting league where their performance is basically the same as cis women for most sports, but not necessarily all of them, depending on what we're looking at. And we want them to have their own. It's just a ban. It's the same as a ban for lots of these things. Or you're saying, I don't care about any of the things that I claim to care about when it comes to trans people. Like women, you know, if you've got this argument, they always do an argument in rugby. It's not safe for trans women to play with cis women. And then you're like, oh, well, all trans people have to play together. It's like, what? So trans women are safe to play against trans men and other trans women, but not like it's suddenly like, I don't care. And the argument here is just, I don't like it, get rid of them. It's just a segregation argument. It's a, I want to solve all my problems by just pushing it out the way. So if I was arguing, sorry, Johnny, I'm doing a monologue.
No.
You can cut in a sec. If you want to argue against this position, I mean, the reality is when we're picking sports categories, the overall goal should be to include as many people as we possibly can, but with the caveat of we still want it to be fair and competitive, otherwise people won't want to compete. And in some cases that means that we need separate categories for men and women, and in some cases that means we need separate weight classes as well. And the first thing we need to do in order to decide whether we need separate categories for men and women or separate weight classes or other separate classes based on physical attributes is to do some science and see if it's important. I mean, if you were trying to argue that we need weight classes for chess, everyone would be like, what are you talking about? Weight isn't a factor in chess. It's just ridiculous. So we need to do the science on this, and we need to say, well, which groups of trans people are you claiming have an unfair advantage? Do we have any evidence for this? Does it apply to the sport we're actually discussing? And that's when we should decide whether we have categories. And if your goal is to have as many people as possible playing the sport, which should be any good faith person's goal, even if we did a load of science and we said, oh, all trans women are unfair to play football, then my position would be, well, we still should try and include everyone. So that might mean at grassroots level it's not so important, and then as it gets more competitive maybe we do need a separate trans league, but if we do we need to have these restrictions on it, and maybe it's open to cis people who want to play or whatever. If they're not doing any of that, then it's just a poor argument. But I think if you just say the response to someone is, well, let's do the science and see what is fair, and you will find that blanket bans never are justified, never makes any sense.
If I may intervene.
Bit of a ramble there.
No, you're good. Johnny... It's all good stuff. I like to, one correction I'd like to make, Katie, is that you said do a load of science. I believe the proper Montgomeryism is do a science. Is, I believe, the correct way of saying
it. You need to do a science.
You need to do a science. But before I weigh in on this, I want to hear from our caller, please. Jamie, what were your thoughts to what Katie said?
I mean, yes, the ideal, as far as we can see, is basically like all sports at the professional level should come down to a gender agnostic set of physical requirements, or even disability agnostic set of physical requirements, though he turned out to be a monster, letting Oscar Pistorius race in the able-bodied Olympics was a step forward. And I think that the model for sports, even at the highest echelon, should be this is what is fair and competitive. And as long as you meet these criteria, regardless of what your birth sex was, what your chromosomes are, etc., you can compete. If it's a physical thing, you know. Of course, sports like snooker or darts or chess, but, or you know, anything.
It is still worth acknowledging how sporting performance has a lot of factors in it, and people always think of strength and skill because they're the things we are kind of wanting to test with sports. But money is like one of the biggest determining factors in sporting achievement.
Yeah.
And another one is prejudice. Trans people aren't going to get the same shot at sports because they face prejudice, like on the field, off the field, in terms of funding, in terms of being able to be rich enough to do the sport, to buy the equipment, to take the time off work, all these other things. So if we were to just agnostically say, oh, we'll just have the categories like this, I think it would still be important to acknowledge how women's sport is underfunded. And perhaps having, you know, women's leagues would still be a good idea in some sense to get funding much better. It should be much better than it is today. Yeah, so absolutely. It's just a fact.
Equality and justice rather than quote unquote fairness. There's so many people that hide behind, oh, well, we just got to be fair. Everyone has to have the same opportunity. No, because some people start at a much higher disadvantage, you know, same with race and all kinds of stuff.
Also,
you know?
If it was fair, then to draw every thing.
You know, sports scientists, sports doctors, and what have you, they are dealing with this. There are standards that do allow transgender people to compete in the categories of their gender, right? We've seen that. And of course, the shitlords online jump on it and go in the attack mode, how ridiculous it is. They do that kind of stuff. But the people who are tasked with figuring out the science of this are working through this. Do they have the answers that will put a pin in it and it's done? Absolutely not. Are they working toward it? I think they are. And is politics a factor in all of that? Yes. In fact, yeah. Us talking about it is great, right? But the scientists are doing a science on it. They're doing it constantly. And unless we are well-versed in their methodology and their conclusions, it becomes a political conversation. And so your friends who are, I'm assuming, weighing in on a political, or the people that you talk to, are weighing in on a political, I would probably argue, I'm going to guess, an uninformed political position. And I think that while it's great to have political positions, and you can't help but have them, it needs to be informed by expertise in this. And so that might be where you can take that conversation, looking at the science. There are things that are known. There are things that are known. There are things that are unknown. And then there are unknown unknowns, known unknowns and unknown unknowns. And as we go down that path, there will be fewer unknowns, both known and unknown, that will help us inform how we should employ policy. But I can tell you, states, the IOC, NCAA, high schools, they all have different standards for this stuff. And it's based in science, and some of it is based in politics. So that's where I would go, is looking at that. Is that perfect?
I think Johnny's point here is good. And I actually think that I learned that this from this show, watching it before I was a host, was someone called in and challenged, you know, two atheists, and they're like, oh yeah, well, what about this evolution thing? You know, what about this archaeology thing? And they were like, well, you know, are you an expert? Because neither of us two are experts. And they were like, well, no, of course I'm not an expert. They're like, have you got like some kind of research grant in this or a PhD? And they were like, no. They're like, so what's your qualifications here? And they're like, well, nothing. You know, I got this off Google or something.
Yeah.
And okay, you're allowed an opinion, but your opinion is literally worthless. Like, my opinion on football is worthless. I don't even know the rules, or soccer for everyone else watching. But like, so when someone says this, oh, trans people should have their own league, I often say, well, what's your, you know, what do you know about sports science? And what do you even know about medical transition? Can you even tell me what medical transition does? Do you know what epigenetics is? And they'll be like, well, no, not really. And like, well, you know, what qualifications do you have here? So why are you giving your opinion on this? Like, it's okay as a pub discussion, but like, if you're saying to remove people's rights and ability to live their lives, who are you?
It's a bit of a dead end.
Fuck off.
Yeah. It's a bit of a dead end, because it's like a bunch of people sitting, really, exactly, a pub conversation, right? But you're not getting anywhere with it. It's like the old game. You ever played that when you before the internet, before smartphones, you'd sit around a table and you'd be like, yeah, well, I read that this was the case. Well, I think that this is the, and you never get anywhere because it's just a bunch of people pulling out of their asses, right? Whereas now you can look it up. Oh, wait, I was wrong, right? Eddie Furlong was the guy in Terminator 2. It's not Leonardo DiCaprio. I lost a toy lightsaber to that bit. I wouldn't have had to lose it in college if I had had the internet with me. So you can engage in that conversation and realize that you're not solving the world's problems. But I think the better tactic is what we're discussing here, which is like, what have you read? What's the science? Show me the science. What is the source of the science? Are you getting it from the Family Research Council? Are you getting it from the IOC or something like that?
Yeah.
And why would the Family Research Council not be as good as the IOC?
Well, that's what I countered with at the end of the conversation. I said, right, fine, I'll look it up. And I actually looked up an article stating that latest research says that it takes about a year of full medical transition for it to be considered, like the transition is sort of complete enough to be considered a biological change. And the IOC has rules on this. But it was kind of like a frustrated, almost like a desperation move to sort of just go, fine, screw it. I'll do the research then. If
you want to, because often like the point in these arguments for them is to just say something dumb and then keep saying it until you give up or be frustrated. I think sometimes it's good to have some knowledge of the, in my mind, it's like the dunks. If you can reveal someone's position is irrational or contradictory or stands on an assumption that they haven't even considered and is false, then you can at least get to a point where they have to do what you had to do, you know, where they have to concede to go and look something up. Just because I got a chance being, you know, thousands of people listening to stuff. When someone talks about trans people in sports, they are talking about trans women in sports. They're not talking about trans people. And when they're doing it, they're talking about, they want to just do a blanket ban. They're like, oh, trans women are just men. They should be banned. That's their argument. That's as far as they've ever considered it. And you could go in and be like, oh, well, what sport are we talking about? And what's the muscle strength? Like that's the like head on argument in. And that's where you end up just having to concede to experts. But there are some very obvious holes in their original, like in the position that they're taking. For example, is they're saying that male puberty gives you an unfair advantage in sport. We can just put that to one side for a second, because not all trans women go through male puberty. So when someone says that, you can be like, well, you're proposing a blanket ban here, but you must concede that a blanket ban would ban trans women who transitioned before puberty and who never went through male puberty and now have effectively gone through female puberty. So what is your claim here? How do they have an unfair advantage? What's your argument here? And I'd be like, oh, well, I'm talking about them. And they're like, well, okay, but that means a blanket ban, like your original claim, a blanket ban is false, right? Can you agree on that? And they'll, you know, either they'll change the subject or, you know, I've done this a lot. Sometimes they concede, okay, I'm not talking about them, I'm talking about everyone else. You go, okay, cool. So what about people who started transitioning 6 months into puberty? Where's the line? How do we test this? When someone turns up to a sporting organization and says, I transitioned at 14, how do you know? Then suddenly they haven't, none of them have considered this. No one pushing for a blanket ban has even spent 5 minutes thinking about this. Their entire argument is they are men, therefore it's bad. Yeah. And as soon as you've got in underneath one of their assumptions and made them realize they know fucking nothing, then it's much easier to say, well, are you an expert? Like, you haven't even considered some of the basic parameters of this discussion. So maybe come back when you've spent 5 minutes thinking about it.
Yeah.
I could rant on this all day.
Yeah. There's a lot to say. I would say this, and I muted you, not because I don't think you have something to say, Jamie, but we have to move on. We just have to. Is that notice that in order to actually have a well-articulated position on this, you have to stop the posturing in that conversation, and you have to listen to a lot of questions where there will not be immediate answers available at the tip of your tongue and the top of your head. And so that's why those conversations are so difficult, that it does require a structure to the conversation. And ultimately that's I think is when people get so fixated on this issue, it is a proxy for a larger discomfort that people have with transgender people. Because honestly, it's said before, they may be interesting questions to have, and there may be some like finer points, right, in this subject. But the truth is, generally speaking, those same people that have such a stake in this don't give a shit about women's sports. They don't. They don't watch it. They care about it to the extent that their daughters are in the sports, right? And if they don't have a daughter in a particular sport, they couldn't care less, except on some conceptual thing. But notice that they are not talking about a lot of other issues that they could talk about from some high concept social good kind of an issue. They're focused on this because they are told to focus on this because the media is covering this issue. That said, this is an important issue. It may not affect billions of people, but it affects many people. And the experts are working on it. And we need to stay up on the science and realize that when a person's talking about this, they might be talking about this plus this whole other huge thing that may be fit into the category of gender critical politics. So, yeah. But you know what? I didn't want to stop that conversation, but we have to move on. Katie, we've had some good times today. We've had some good arguments.
We had a good time.
Yeah, we always do. And this time was
one of my favorite calls ever, I think.
The emoji one?
I just couldn't believe that was the argument. Because when he was like, just look at that punctuation. I was like, oh, I can tell a lame joke here. It's a smiley face. And he was like, exactly. I was like, exactly. What? What's happening here?
there are ways that you can support the ACA. You can donate at the fundraiser below. You can like and subscribe and ring the bell for the channel. You can become a member by clicking join. You can support us on Patreon at tiny.cc/patreonth. You can become part of the community in our fan run Facebook page. You can go to AEN podcast. That's tiny.cc/AEN podcast. And of course, you can check out the flagship show, The Nonprofits, which will be airing immediately. Will we please have the crew cam? Please depict the crew for our beautiful audience out there.
Yay! They are.
We got three faces, smiling faces, waving. Thank you so much.
One face per person.
Is that a coincidence? Do you think that might be a message? One face per person. But there's three of them.
I think.
Wait, there's three of them, Katie.
The backstage crew have predicted the next. Yeah, the Trinity.
Yes.
I don't know which one of them's which, but they have predicted the next pandemic for
sure. Greg the Father. Tonight, Greg the Father. I don't know about the other two. Look, if you believe or not, if you're working to keep the world running, thank you so much. If you are being courteous, if you are aware of the fact that there are people who have really suffered as a result of this pandemic, whether it's physically suffered or through isolation and through radicalization because they're stuck at home and they're reading QAnon crap or whatever it might be, have some compassion, engage with them. We want to thank you for all the good work that you're doing to sort of put the world back together after the pandemic, the desolation, the abomination and desolation of the pandemic that was totally predicted by Jesus Christ. If you don't believe in love rings, if you don't believe in ghosts and goblins and ghoulies and prophecies and what have you, this is your community. Come on in here, send us emails, go down in the chat, find us on social media. We love to talk to people. Come down to the library at the end of the month. I'm going to be there in costume with Cynthia McDonald, my friend and co-host and co-producer of The Nonprofits. Come on down. We want to see you. We want to say hi. If you do believe in the kind of stuff that we heard today, we don't hate you.
We're just not convinced.
See you next week.
We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Friday at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTW and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTW.